It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back. Bills have been on the field some this week. It was Tuesday when the media was allowed to be present, and we talked to Sal on Tuesday, among other things, about Elijah Moore, who we had a couple of sound bites from his conversation with Sal. And Sal today has posted more on Moore, that conversation, an article up at WGR550.com. Sal, let's start there. So while we did get into him a little bit on Tuesday, this question came up yesterday between Bulldog and me. This year on the Bills, Elijah Moore is wide receiver what? Maybe that's not easy, but you deserve a crack at it.
Yeah, that depends how you define it. Is it what the stats are at the end of the season? Is it how often he's on the field? I think he's number 5 or 4, but I do think that could come with, you know, making critical plays in moments and being on the field in those times, right? I think he probably starts off as wide receiver number 5 with a chance to get to 4. I don't know if he could get to Josh Palmer's level, but boy, I mean, I look back when I did this article and I talked to him, and then I went back and looked at his numbers and what he's been through the first 2 years and what he still put up. I'm like, man, I give this guy a shot to kind of, you know, be right there in the mix to maybe being a guy that, you know, could really kind of contribute. I'll put it this way. I wrote this in the article. It's pretty amazing. You think about the quarterbacks that he has played with through 4 years of his NFL career. Here we go. Zach Wilson, Mike White, Joe Flacco twice, Josh Johnson, Chris Streveler, Deshaun Watson, P.J. Walker, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jeff Driscoll, Jameis Winston, and Bailey Zappi. And the guy still averaged over 500 yards a season. I think there's a chance here for something to happen.
Yeah. This is some downright Mike White slander, by the way.
And Deshaun Watson, by the way, belongs in that group. Like, this is not like pre... Like, this is the Deshaun Watson who completely derailed his entire life and career. So he was terrible, too. Not the good Houston Deshaun Watson, obviously. So, yeah, you know, him in the pecking order, when Mike asked me that, Sal, I went to the zoo on this question. I was like, I thought, you know, maybe he and Samuel have to battle it out, and like he, you know, maybe one or the other is going to get, you know, a lot of snaps and be a prominent part of the offense, and maybe the other one will be more of a spare part, or maybe not even here. Who knows? And then I looked at the depth chart and went, oh, wait a minute. Really, the 5 guys are pretty clearly defined, including him, I'd say, you know, from a experience and like expectation standpoint even. But then you think about, well, wouldn't they want to keep a guy around who's more of a duplicate of a Coleman or a Palmer in case something happens, right? You can't have all guys that are predominantly slot speed guys in your receiving corps, because if something goes wrong outside, you're going to need someone. So that's where, like, I don't know, a Jalen Virgil or someone that's a practice squad level guy maybe comes into play a little bit. So I wonder, like, we're always clamoring for more guys, so I don't want to thin the herd or anything, but from a type of player standpoint, I feel like Samuel and Moore are kind of duplicates.
Yeah, I think that their skill sets are similar in ways, but I think about how they could be used. I think the Bills really wanted to use Curtis Samuel in a really jack-of-all-trades type of way last year. It just never worked out. He had the injury early on, and I think if you're going to use a guy like that, you kind of have to have – he has to be involved more. He has to be on the field more, available more, got to have that chemistry. I don't see that with Moore. Now, you could use him in different roles like that. To me, Moore is more of a – down the field, we need a guy that can stretch it a little bit. He can play that slot role. I think you move Samuel around. Samuel's a converted running back. So I just think that even though you're right, like where are the targets, where are the numbers, right? You look at the targets. You can't just feed everybody. You just can't do that. Everybody eats, but you can't feed everybody. It's not going to work like that. Not everybody's going to be getting 10 targets a game. You know, it can't happen. But I mean, like, this is amazing when I think and look at the last year at the snap counts. Mac Hollins clearly had more snaps than anybody on the Bills roster by like 130 snaps. He cleared Keon Coleman's 721. The next closest was Keon Coleman at 598. That's 721 snaps that are available basically to the Bills this year, right? And now Curtis Samuel is going to hopefully have an uptick because of his, you know, because of his availability, mm-hmm. hopefully. And then you bring in, there's no more Amari Cooper. He's not here anymore. So that's another 239 snaps, by the way, that he played. So I just think there's room here for these guys all to get on the field. I don't know. I think how you put the parts together and they play is going to be the question.
Is it the big reason for that disparity with Hollins that he would have been on the field for like all running plays, blocking? You know, mm-hmm. like we'll talk to Rich Rebar next week. He's writing, maybe he writes the Bills chapter for Warren Sharp's book, and he was tweeting today about Kincaid and how he, you know, we would, this is intuitive, like he's on the field for many fewer rushing plays than Knox is. So who's in that role, Sal, if I'm right about this, like who takes Hollins' place as the receiver that the Bills trust, you know, most of all in the run game?
It's a good question. I think Keon Coleman could be a guy that they could really like there. I think he did a nice job growing as a blocker last year, but he's not. You're going to rely on him to catch more passes, so I don't think you can kind of just pigeonhole him there, no doubt.
Yep.
You got to give him more opportunity there. Khalil Shakir obviously can block a little bit. He's not the biggest guy, but he understands. I think this is where a guy like Jackson Hawes comes into play as a tight end. It doesn't have to go to another wide receiver. Now you can free a guy like Dalton Kincaid up even more. You know, Dawson Knox doesn't have to have as much on his plate. And I think Jackson Hawes starts to come into play here, where maybe you can put him on the field a little bit more. And yeah, those 721 snaps don't have to be divided and go right to a wide receiver. If you're talking in the run game, now you have a guy who's eligible to catch passes, and maybe the way it works is you put a tight end on the field like Jackson Hawes, and now Dalton Kincaid's usage ticks up a little bit from the wide receiver point and spot where you can flex him out a little bit.
So Kincaid's, just sort of the progression here might be that Kincaid's targets go up, which mm-hmm. I think we'd like. But I wonder if it might signify a change in philosophy. Mac Hollins is, you know, there's not a lot of players like him, I think, where he gives you a little bit. I mean, he led the team, not the league, in touchdown catches. But, you know, you have a sort of specific role for him. And I don't know who that, you know, you're talking about a guy that might end up being sort of a third tight end. He might end up being almost like a lineman who you can throw it to as a guy who kind of serves as somewhat of a replacement there. I wonder if it means in either direction, Sal, like more power football or less, because not having Hollins makes for an interesting adjustment.
Yeah, if the Bills, I think, still want to lean into being a team that can really run the ball down your throat, right? And I know that, like, how that sounds. Not saying that they just want to be a team that's ground and pound, mm-hmm. but we know that this is not a team that wants to just sit back and put Josh Allen in the pocket all day long. Yeah, that can really give you great results, but you know what else can and did last year? Running the football the way they did. And they did a really good job of that. And they see light boxes because they have Josh Allen. So why not take advantage of those light boxes? They're seeing teams that are playing nickel against them. They're seeing teams that are playing dime against them sometimes. Now you bring in a guy, another tight end like Jackson Hawes, and say, fine, you want to do that. We'll take advantage. We'll run a ball right at you. And then when you decide to creep guys up, you know, we'll be able to throw it. So I don't know if it's a change in philosophy. I think that maybe leaning more into the philosophy of, okay, instead of Alec Anderson, we have this guy, the tight end now, who can do the same thing. And oh, by the way, we can throw the ball when he's on the field a little bit. So yeah, it's interesting. I can't imagine we had Joe Marino on today. We were talking in the morning show. You know, Joe brought up the number of passes for Josh Allen. Josh was under 500 attempts last year. Do you think he's going to have over 500 this year? I bet he's around the same this year, probably. I think it looks kind of the same.
Yeah. Sal, you know, let's hear a little bit more, if you're up for it, about your conversation with Moore. Because, you know, it's not a guy, you know, he showed up after the draft and there was, you know, all this hoopla about being, you know, going, choosing to, you know, attack mode the way he did about the receiver conversation. And then here comes Moore, and I think the idea might be growing on fans that he could be someone who has an impact. What did you take away from talking to him on Tuesday?
I took away the fact that he is self-aware about, I think there's his growth, right? This is a mental growth for a lot of people in any walk of life. Like, I mean, you think that, you know, you have this certain role and you're going to go in there and you're going to make a difference. It's all about you. And I think you have to learn in a lot of ways about being part of a team and how you fit in. And his response to me was really interesting when we talked about, him being in New York and him being in Cleveland and how things kind of didn't go quite right for him in those particular, or in for the team and him together. They haven't had much team success. Now, Cleveland did make the playoffs his first year there, but obviously otherwise they haven't had a lot of team success. They won 3 games last year. The Jets have the longest playoff drought in the NFL right now. And he said, going to the right system, he said, I kind of slept on it, meaning when he was coming out of the draft, because I also told him, hey, there were a lot of people in Buffalo that wanted the Bills to draft you. He said, yeah, you know, I can't choose that. But he said, thinking that it didn't abide is the word he used, meaning he said, maybe you got players and sometimes not the best systems who can't turn it around, but it does take all 11. It definitely takes all 11. And I just think that was, to me, like an awareness on his part saying, hey, mate, I have this skill set and that's great, but man, if I'm not in the right spot, that's not going to matter. And I got to have the right system around me and the quarterback and the people around me, because I think I bring something to the table that can flourish.
Well, maybe it goes without saying after all this, but I think he'll be one of the most interesting players to monitor in camp. Like, there could be a real ceiling with him. If the sort of simple points about the quarterbacks he's played with, which, by the way, I mean, Sal, you're talking about some high first-round picks right there. And Zach Wilson and Jameis Winston, a 101. But nonetheless, if it really is like sort of that simple, he's a guy that just hasn't really had his chance yet. He's young. Then, okay, I mean, I want to think he can go higher than wide receiver 4 on this team, even if that's right. But it's a question of, like, the team's commitment, which isn't massive. They already kind of had it built before he got here. And, you know, what kind of chance he gets. Maybe he's a guy in the preseason that plays a lot and, you know, has a chance to show that he's
you know
worth.
Yeah, what's interesting, Mike, is when you say, like, however you phrase it there, getting his shot. It's funny, like, he's put up decent numbers in this league. It's not like he's this, like, oh my God, this guy has potential, it hasn't worked. I don't know, Andy Isabella, right? Andy Isabella is a second round pick, and he comes in, and the Bills liked him coming out of the draft, right? But it really, whatever his numbers were in Arizona, they weren't second round pick worthy numbers.
That's right.
This is the 34th pick in the draft. This is the second round pick. And no, he hasn't put up 1,000-yard seasons. He had over 600 yards 1 year, though. He's never had less than like 4-something. His numbers last year, amazing. When you put a comparison, I put this in the article. His targets last year would have led the Buffalo Bills. His catches and yards last year would have been second on the Buffalo Bills, a team that scored 30 points on offense per game. So I just think it's kind of really super interesting how of course it matters that he's in Cleveland and it's a different team and he's playing with different guys on the depth chart. But those numbers don't stink, right? Those are good numbers in the NFL.
Yeah, what I think he's up against maybe is just there was so much, and I don't think it was just here. He was an intriguing idea for, I think, a lot of fans, and maybe that crosses over into fantasy, and he's never smashed. So if you thought he was going to be up here, and he never is, then, you know, the knee jerk is, oh, bust. But there's a vast middle area in there between bust and smash, right? And he's maybe been living in that middle area, just kind of a guy type numbers. And maybe there is still a smashable player in there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in New York, there were some things, I think, that happened behind the scenes, locker room. Like, there's part of the reason why they traded him, whatever happened in New York. You know, so I think all of this has kind of gone into his career. And again, maturity-wise, right? Like, you hope and you think that, you know, you're going to come into a locker room that this is where culture comes in. Hey, we have a culture where this guy's going to come in, he's going to understand you're a part of this machine. Like, it's not about you, it's about this team. And you have the league MVP throwing you footballs. You don't like it, you can't handle it. Like, we'll find somebody else that we can put there because he's going to make everybody look really good. And I thought that was interesting. I ended with, you know, one of the quotes he gave me about when I asked him, what's the difference here? Like, you were there in New York, you were in Cleveland, you've seen it. Like, is there something that stands out? And right away he said, oh yeah, I've gone home and talked to my wife about this already. Like, he said, it's just the little things. He said, the respect that players show for the coaches when you're in team meetings, taking out your notebooks and writing things down and just paying attention. Now, he didn't say that didn't happen in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. He didn't say that didn't happen in New York, but there's an implication there, right? I think.
Sure.
In a lot of ways. And I just think that was like really interesting to listen to him talk about that.
Right. The peer pressure on teams that don't have that piece right might be to sort of treat it like detention. Whereas a team that's got that stuff right, the peer pressure is to pay attention and take notes and be ready if called on.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I think that he, from my conversation with him, you know, I just think he's embracing this opportunity. And the overall point is, you know, he could have taken more guaranteed money to stay in Cleveland. He's betting on himself, and he said, I know what I can do, and this is going to pay off, and I'm here, and I'm going to show what I can do.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. I slipped a point in about Kincaid earlier. Again, it's Rich Rebar for Warren Sharp's publication, Lord Reeves on Twitter, if you want it, with some tweets about Kincaid today, breaking down his data. I think I saw second among tight ends in targets per route run. So when he's running a route, he got the ball plenty, or he had the ball thrown to him plenty. Much more down the field than his rookie year. That sounded right. You know, I think we would have guessed that. 2 for 11, Allen to Kincaid on, you know, deeper, intermediate to deeper shots. I think all of it is maybe about what we expected. It's the question now is like, all right, so what next for Kincaid? And maybe this goes back to what we were talking about already, but, you know, we've had a few things, Sal. We've had Brandon Bean making a comment about Kincaid's strength and then trying to clarify that later on. What do you think this year they want his role to be, and how does it end up?
Well, I think they want him to be a, you know, pass-catching tight end that they can rely on to throw in all situations, whether that's red zone, full field, get down the field. You know, I was a bit, like, kind of surprised, maybe even disappointed in his rookie year, how that wasn't, they didn't really come to fruition enough, right? I thought that could be something that he could be a part of last year. And maybe it would have been a little bit if he didn't have, you know, the injuries. But, you know, the injuries were real. You talk to people in the Bills organization, I will tell you, like, the injuries were real. And he was already dealing with a knee, and then he banged his knee when the Bills were in,
Indianapolis, I think, yeah.
Yep, Indy, in that game where, you know, Josh overthrew him, he banged that knee, and he fought through it. Like, there were times, I think Brandon Bean made the comment of, like, he even played, you know, games where maybe, you know, in other situations or other people, they wouldn't have played, but he wanted to be out there, so he did. And, you know, we hear that a lot of guys. We heard that about Gabe Davis a few years ago, playing through an injury, you know, throughout the season. But the injuries were real with Dalton Kincaid, and I think that they want him to be a guy that they can rely on to kind of, you know, be a mismatch against linebackers because he's too fast, or against DBs because he's a little bit bigger. And that's where the get stronger, get bigger, because you can be a matchup and teams are going to have to understand that we can throw the ball to you at any point.
Yeah, the catchable target rate was really shockingly low between he and Allen. And hopefully, Sal, that's another thing where the injuries played a part in that, because they just did not have a connection last year. Like, it was like at 54% or something, I think, which is just, for a quarterback of Allen's capability, that just really blew my mind that they missed that much.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was, guys. Maybe you do. There was a at the Combine. Do you remember at the Combine? There was an NFL writer. It might have been a fantasy writer. Maybe it was Matthew Berry, actually. I don't even remember if it was him. Somebody had tweeted out something, how they talked to a Bills source at the Combine.
Yes.
Who said, hey, if I'm going to buy stock into somebody, and like it was like Kincaid. Like Kincaid. Kincaid's the guy. So I just think, like, I go back to that comment even, which is just, you know, very close removed from the stuff we heard from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott at the end of the year. And I think about that comment and, you know, the fact that he was a first-round pick and they had these injuries and they're going to rely on him and they want that to pay off, that I just believe that they want him to be a real big part of what they do.
Yeah.
So it was Matthew Berry. Also had the comment about Amari Cooper not coming back, probably, in the same article.
Right. That's right.
Which he didn't.
Yeah. That's right. Before we part ways for the day here and for the week, Sal, We opened up today talking about the Dolphins. This news about them maybe being open to trading Jonnu Smith potentially to the Steelers was right as our show started, and we talked through, like, what are the Dolphins up to? You want to take a crack at that? Like, I'm not sure they should be in a position to be divesting themselves of good players, but it also, they, I think, are perceived as going the wrong way, and there's been locker room stuff there, and like maybe they just want to clean some guys out and try to an extent start over from that standpoint and still sort of keep going with Tua and Hill and Waddle and everybody.
Yeah, this is just an extension of what I've thought about the Dolphins all offseason, which is I don't think they understand or know what they want to do and what they want to be. Do they want to go for it and be a team that they feel can compete for the playoffs and maybe even a division title, I guess, because they've been down that road and close the last couple of years, a couple of years ago especially? Or do they want to be a team that, you know, needs to kind of hit the reset button a little bit? I think what complicates matters here, Chris Greer has been at his job a long time. Right. So, like, you know, how many cracks does he get at it? I think that he's already had a few. There's been some issues with coaches and quarterbacks, and there's been those kinds of things. And now you got Mike McDaniel, who's been there. He signed a contract extension. Like, I don't know if these guys, they understand they don't really have time to do that. And you have an impatient owner in a lot of ways, probably, who maybe he doesn't even. A lot of times people accuse of. It's more about the product off the field or the star power in Miami than it is about winning. There's been accusations of that, you know, that's been floated around. So I think all of that kind of just intersects in a really bad way, to be quite honest with you, the Miami Dolphins. And nobody really knows what they should do or how they should proceed. And I think this is just another example of that.
Very good. Sal, thank you as always.
You got it, guys.
It's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
I think the average fan, not a Bills fan necessarily, has one bottom line question about Dalton Kincaid, which is, are we sure he's good? You know, like, even the profile coming into the league, he had one knockout game for Utah against USC. I mean, just monster game. Not a lot of them. I mean, he wasn't dominant really at Utah. He didn't work out pre-draft. Like, there was not a combine stat line to work with, but that's not to say he's not athletic enough. I don't know. He was not supposed to be the first tight end picked. He was picked by Ken Dorsey. That was the story, that the Bills' previous offensive coordinator wanted him. And I don't know if exactly Joe Brady knows what to do with him. Is he a down-the-field target? Is he a red zone target? He hasn't been really anything yet. That's where I'm at. I mean, the draft capital only goes so far, as we know. Like, some guys don't live up to it. And I think, like, that's where I am on this player, is I just haven't seen. Why can't he catch passes from Josh Allen? His knee? Like, okay. But I tend to not like to make that excuse. I didn't want to make it for Davis, and Davis kind of disappeared immediately from the league after that season.
Well, settling for the injury as an explanation sort of absolves Allen, you know, to an extent. Right? He's not getting to the spots in time or something like that, and I don't know that that's the case. You know, it could be Allen and he just can't get on the same page, regardless of the injury thing. That would be a big problem for a player that you invested a first-round pick in. But I feel like this year, you're going to have to find that out. Right? You have to figure out whether he can help you moving forward.
Right.
Because if he can't, you got to get somebody as a pass-catching tight end who can.
I can appreciate the Bills wanting it to happen.
Sure.
Brandon Bean, who drafted him, who very well might have been Matthew Berry's source. That's the way the Cooper thing read, is like, you know, this is my guy. But it hasn't really gone very well. 803-0550 for your thoughts. Dalton Kincaid, James Cook, Stephon Diggs, even. Dare I bring his name up again? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
I think that James is a very good player that is extremely valuable to the Bills, but I think that the Bills are valuable to James Cook as well. When you have a quarterback like Josh Allen, when you have the run scheme like the Bills have with the run blocking, I think there's a lot that James benefits from being in this ecosystem to play his best football. I think that's part of the equation. And I do wonder what factors are important to Brandon Bean. You know, he hasn't paid a running back. Is there something that could be different? I mean, the Bills know who James Cook is. Are they adverse to meeting those demands because they don't want to put those types of resources into the position?
So many questions unanswered to this point. Joe Marino this morning on WGR. If you missed it, find the Audacy app. AUDACY. That's us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening and watching. If you didn't know, YouTube and Twitch every day. You can see us. I don't know. Is it working out for you? Hopefully it is. People are, we're told, watching the streams.
We appreciate you finding us any way that you can. So thank you.
X?
Sure, yeah, we're there.
Ride for Roswell in your case? You'll be at that? I might be at that. You're riding. I might be at that.
Oh, well, good. Yeah, I was
on the golf course.
Yeah, I was. We're a sponsor this year for the first time. The Odyssey family of stations, and I'm very excited and proud that they took that step because this will be my fifth year riding. So they had a schedule for all of us, and not all of us. I didn't see your name on it, but. I was scheduled to be like on stage sort of, you know, talking and thanking sponsors and all this sorts of stuff. And I guess I've been bumped because I was going to go first, but even that was going to be, we ride at like 6:35. We're like the first group out the ride I'm doing. So there wouldn't be enough time for me to be doing that and then go ride. So maybe you're going to pinch hit for me. I don't know what I'm doing.
There, but.
I hope you get there. It's a huge event.
It's a great
really
day.
Great event. Yeah.
Patrick is with us. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. So my question is actually kind of disguised as a fantasy question. But, you know, Bulldog mentioned something going into the break about whether or not, you know, the catch rate for Kincaid was a Kincaid stat or a Josh Allen stat, and I believe it was something like 37% of his passes.
Well, yeah, there's some clarification needed here. 69% overall of his 81 targets were deemed catchable by fantasy points. 37% of those attempts that were 10 or more air yards were catchable. So it's a terrible rate for 10 or more air yards.
Sounds like that includes playoffs.
Yeah, and so like I'm kind of looking at that as a, you know, as a layman, am I not expecting to maybe see Kincaid have a better outcome going into this season, given, you know, the injury last year, given that maybe him and Allen are not necessarily on the same page. If that percentage ticks up, then we should see, you know, X amount more production.
Do you end up thinking it'll happen, Patrick, or you're just asking that?
I'm more asking it, but yeah, I mean, I guess if I'm going into fantasy draft this year, I'm looking to get, you know, value on Kincaid because, you know, I think people have soured on him and I'm, you know, looking for that year two jump to come in year three.
Right. And he's so cheap that you almost don't have to worry about it at all in draft so far. He's like 13th round or something like that. So it's not going to cost you anything. Patrick, I don't know what to do with him. I mean, there are good points on both sides. How good is he is my question, like I said before when you were listening about him. I don't know. I mean, I think he had a fine college career. He had one incredible game. I'm sure two or three other good ones, but it wasn't like he was – he wasn't Brock Bowers or anything close to that. Mm-hmm. And as a Bill, in 2 years, there have been excuses. His knee, his usage, I don't know. Like, is Allen somehow suddenly erratic when it comes to Dalton Kincaid? Like, there's just been excuses so far. And with the concept of their offense and the number of other players that also are, like, you know, pretty good, where does that leave him? He doesn't play nearly as often as Knox on running downs. So he's limited from the beginning since he was drafted because of Knox. What does that all give me as a stat line? I think the saving grace can be touchdowns. That's kind of what I thought for a couple of years. I mean, he's a big body, but that hasn't happened at all.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know what to do. I think in terms of fantasy, you can do it. I'm doing it because it's so cheap. But it needs to be cheap, you know?
And I'll kind of tie this in also with, you know, the James Cook question. So let's say Kincaid, you know, does make that leap. Does that make Dawson Knox with that contract a little bit more expendable that we could then, you know, use that money towards James Cook?
Well, you know, it seems to me for a while that, like, Knox should be expendable, but he's not going anywhere. Like, his contract would be almost impossible to move. It would be, you know, pretty strict penalty to cut him. I thought when the season ended, we could be talking about that. Sean McDermott blew that up the first day after the season ended with how important Knox is.
I think if they wanted to pay Cook the money Cook is seeking, they would find a way to pay the money Cook is seeking, irrespective of anything to do with Knox. I mean, it's a logical question to ask, you know, allocate resources differently. But I guess what I'm hoping they're thinking ends up coming to fruition, which is I don't want to pay a running back that I don't care what the salary cap is. Well, I shouldn't say that. If it were $400 million, maybe you could pay a running back $15 million. I don't think there has to be a correlation finding the money. They could find the money somehow, some way, if they wanted to be in the business of paying a running back that much. I'm just not sure that they should be or want to. Yeah, everything with Kincaid is coming with, you know, some caveat about he was a rookie, Utah, whatever, 73 catches. Hey, I mean, that's pretty good. For rookie tight ends, it's almost record setting, except that everyone in the league is doing that, or there's guys coming in every year that are blowing past that even. So that doesn't even really rate. Last year, 3.5 yards of separation per route run, ranked tied for 64th among tight ends.
Among tight ends? I mean, name 63 other tight ends.
Now, the caveat on that should be that includes guys who ran at least one pass route during the year.
Okay.
So it's not like someone who's on the field all the time necessarily.
But he doesn't even play tight end.
But still, what is that? Well, he couldn't separate last year because, his knees, he was injured. Like, you've got an excuse or an out almost at every turn. This year, it just is going to have to happen. Or I think they're going to have to find a different path.
You know what the question might be in a year, if it's the same? Do you give him the fifth-year extension?
Yeah.
Do you even bother?
The fifth-year option, yeah.
The fifth-year option.
Yeah.
Like, if 44 catches and 2 touchdowns again?
Because that's where we'll be. That's right. That's where we'll be. That's going into the fourth year. You got to make a decision on that. And, yeah, if it's at all like it's been, I wouldn't want to go near that.
It'd be nice to have. Can we all agree on this? I don't know. It's never going to change, probably. Thinking of Davis and Kincaid in the same way, like his injuries, would it be nice if you sort of like knew the truth? So Knox said that Kincaid, the season ends and he had injuries in both knees. It was reported that Kincaid had a torn PCL. So that's, that's not nothing. He also, and I'm using RotoWire as a source here, he also was not on the injury report for any of the playoff games. So, like, what is it? Why not just put him on the injury report if he's
nursing something?
Nursing something.
Something. Right.
So the season ends and the team is always in a big hurry. I mean, it's football, of course, everybody's hurt some. They're always in a big hurry to tell you how, like, well, it's actually not fair to criticize him because he had this injury and that injury. You're like, okay, well, fair enough. But you really don't know how that affected him or any player, because he's on the field, which is to his credit.
Right, but
he wants to play through the pain.
I mean, his injury report point is a good point.
Just put him on the list,
right,
then.
Right.
So you don't end up having – it doesn't say it all, but at least it's a little bit more evidence that
– he's playing through something.
Right. Why not do that?
Yeah.
Then it's like a hockey thing. You don't want guys to know he's got a knee injury. Didn't we all kind of know that anyway?
I mean, he missed a little time and came back, he had like a giant brace or something on it, I think.
I don't know.
That was pretty evident that he suffered some kind of a leg injury there.
The caller's fantasy-minded. He wants to know whether Kincaid is worth the investment. And I only say yes because it's the 13th round. Otherwise, I'm not hot for this player. Just Knox is still here.
Where was he going last year and even in his rookie year?
Way earlier last year. I don't remember. I could look this up, I think. Last year he was like tight end, maybe top five even.
Mm-hmm.
Kelsey was still up there but had slipped. Andrews. Laporta had the huge year in 23.
Right, the rookie
with all
year.
The touchdowns, and like he might have been number one. I'll go find out. I'll go find a draft board. Hang in there, everybody. Here comes fantasy information.
From 2 years ago.
from last year, but and 2 years ago. Yes, I'll get it all for you so I don't disappoint. Hate to disappoint. 803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. If you Google to the last conversation, Dalton Kincaid fantasy, you'll see, or ADP, you'll see several articles from last summer from fantasy analysts who were super hyped for him. Breakout candidate. Diggs is gone. Davis is gone. This should year two breakout. This should be the year. And accordingly, he was going, at least by one site, as tight end 5 last year. That was about my guess. Like, he might have even been top 5, and he was right at that number. This year, tight end 14 on Underdog, ADP 137. So that is the 12th round, not quite the 13th, off by one. Right between Tucker Kraft and Jake Ferguson. And this is not a fantasy show, although sometimes it probably sounds like it. But there are a lot. It's rich in that part of the draft. Njoku, Kraft, Kincaid, Ferguson, Goddard, Pitts. Even people like Isaiah Likely a lot from Baltimore. All those guys are rounds 11 and 12, pretty much. So if you don't get Bowers or McBride this year, or Kittle even, you can do fine, I think, those guys in the middle. I like those guys in the middle. There you go. Anything else you need on this subject? Not right now?
I want to, just to kind of fill it all out, I'm trying to find Allen's catchable pass percentage on throws of 10-plus yards to everyone, not just Kincaid.
It's not great.
I'm seeing 37%, which is the same number as Kincaid, and I want to be hopeful that I need to punch in something else to my search engine, because that's ridiculously low.
I know, I don't know about catchable, but I know like their success rate, theirs down the field last year ranked very low in the league. It just was not, we saw it. It was just not a part of their offense. What's the passing play of the year last year?
The long catch and run by Shakir against the Jets.
Shakir against the Jets, and how long a pass is that? Like maybe 20 yards, maybe less?
If that, yeah.
There was one in the Rams game like that. There was Coleman in Seattle, right?
Coleman in Seattle was in the end zone. Houston, he had a long one. Again, but that's a short pass. It's a little slant, and he just goes.
Tyrell Shavers, one catch.
69 yards. That was a short throw.
They're all short passes.
Yeah.
Worked.
Yeah, I mean, maybe... If that's right, like if that number matches Kincaid's number, then you have an offensive structure problem maybe more than you have a Kincaid problem. Like I think that could give you some reason to hope that they'll figure out what is wrong with Allen and Kincaid, because there was something wrong maybe with Allen to everyone 10 or more yards downfield. You just want to be better than that. So maybe it's not as much of a Kincaid problem, that connection.
Well, what is it? I mean, scheme, but separation, right?
Yeah.
Speed, lack of speed, lack of separation. You're capped.
Right. No, yeah. Well, lack of, and Kincaid was very low in that metric, as we just talked about last segment. So, yeah, that gives you very little margin for error.
You know,
because if you're close to the defender when the ball gets there, you know what can happen.
Sal brought up a conversation from this morning, and how it was brought up whether Josh Allen would have more pass attempts this year, 483, which wouldn't have ranked that high, I think. And that's always a function of a few things. One is, how good is your defense? If you're winning all the time, you know, you don't need to throw it all the time, right? So that would come down. The Bills were winning all the time. That would be limited because of that. I would want to think it goes up this year, though.
Yeah,
that can be the turnover point. Yeah. I would want to think that they would basically need more from him this year.
Yeah, his career number is closer to 63%. Allen, 10-plus yards, success rate.
Okay.
That's not catchable. That is completion percentage. So there's slightly different metrics there, but whatever. If you're coming down with the ball, that works. So last year was a real dip overall, not just Kincaid.
And so, you know, it's always an interesting conversation. We certainly have it all the time. Okay, what about it? Taking Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper out of the equation shouldn't be that much of a detriment. to this. It even gives them a chance for an upgrade. Oh, I'm going to have to settle for, you know, a power game and 13 wins again. Oh, no. I know. It always comes back to this. The essence is how much they need that. And last year happened, and they performed poorly in this area, and they didn't really need it. Unless you want to use the playoffs and the ending, and right, Kincaid didn't catch the pass, and they needed a little bit more. Like, you can do that, but it's a pretty high bar. I mean, all the season they had last year, all the points, everything, it's kind of tough to criticize, I think. But that is really, that's the whole wide receiver debate back and forth is, do they need it any more than what they already have? I apologize, I guess, if this just seems redundant, like that we're always talking about this, but so many different players and topics sort of lead you to that. Can they win again or even win more without better down the field? And I think they think yes. I mean, that's why Brandon Bean was defiant about the subject. And I think within that, he sees Joshua Palmer as an important addition. And we will see. I don't think he has a ton of company in that.
That is a player, though. I heard this stat today on my way in. Eighth. Yeah, it was Trapasso filling in for Brownie and Tasker. He was with Matty Glad today on One Bills Live. Eighth in separation.
Yep. That's why they got him.
I mean, that should be provable. Well, it is provable. It should be dependable. That should be an upgrade for them in that respect, at least with one receiver.
Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Your comments welcome at 803-0550. This is WGR.